Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
In 1999, Britney Spears rose to pop superstardom with her album Baby One More Time. She became the best-selling teenager of all time. And if you look back at old interviews she gave on national TV and around the world, young Britney maintains a composure and maturity even as interviewers ask her questions about her body, her dress. She was hounded viciously by paparazzi, later mocked by the very media that benefited from her ratings power, and slowly, the public scrutiny ground Spears down. There were some episodes of erratic behavior, reports of substance abuse, and in 2008, she was involuntarily committed to a psychiatric ward. Moreover, a court put her under a conservatorship, a legal arrangement meant to protect her by giving her father and a lawyer complete control over her assets and, as the world recently discovered, control over almost every aspect of how she lives. Yet ever since, Spears has continued to produce hit after hit, kept up a grueling tour schedule, wrote her own songs, choreographed her own shows, and acted on television. In the process, she's also made her family and those around her rich. Britney Spears likens the situation of being under a conservatorship and yet providing the money for her family, she likens that to human trafficking, to involuntary servitude. Well, last week, she went to court and said she wants the conservatorship to end. And here were Britney Spears' closing remarks to a California judge.
I deserve to have a life. I've worked my whole life. I deserve to have a 2 to 3 year break and just, you know, do what I want to do. But I do feel like I feel open and I'm okay to talk to you today about it. But I wish I could stay with you on the phone forever, because when I get off the phone with you, all of a sudden, I hear all these no's, no, no, no. And then all of a sudden I feel ganged up on and I feel bullied and I feel left out and alone. And I'm tired of feeling alone. And that's all I wanted to say to you. And thank you so much for letting me speak to you today.
Oh, Ms. Spears, you're quite welcome. I just want to tell you that I certainly am sensitive to everything that you said and how you're feeling. And I know that it took a lot of courage for you to say everything you had to say today.
Well, just yesterday, Britney Spears' attorney filed a motion to remove her father as the conservator of her estate. The Los Angeles Superior Court denied the request without prejudice. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point, and today we're going to be talking about Britney Spears' fight to regain control of her life, and really, more broadly, what her story tells us about conservatorships, how they are supposed to work, and frequently do, and what happens when they go wrong, and why. And we're going to start today with Lisa McCarley. She has been working since 2020 with a growing public movement called the Free Britney Movement. She's a probate and conservatorship attorney practicing in Los Angeles County. Lisa McCarley, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's my pleasure.
So first of all, before we get to what specifically happened in court actually just yesterday with the rejection of Britney Spears' request to remove her father from the conservatorship, I'm wondering if you can just describe to us some of the things that Britney Spears says she has had to endure under the conservatorship. Why did she liken it in that statement last week to the court? I mean, she really did liken it directly to human trafficking.
It really was shocking. So I was standing outside with a large crowd of young people who are in the Free Britney movement, call themselves the Free Britney movement. So one of the things that we were shocked about is the idea that she was forced to use an IUD and was not allowed to take that. There is absolutely no law in the state of California that will allow any conservator to basically involuntarily sterilize someone. That was shocking. The allegations regarding the administration of lithium. There's no authority for any probate court conservator to have that, take that step. So there was, and there was just so much. I just had such sadness and empathy for Brittany because she's been made to work even when she was sick, which seems so such a violation of her rights and her human dignity. So that was to me some of the major points.
Right. So let me just jump in here to be clear. So what Spears said was that she's for years now she's had this IUD and she wants to have it removed, right? She wants to have more children, and yet her conservators are not allowing her to go. They're not allowing her to go to the doctor to get it removed, right?
Well, that's what, you know, Brittany is saying.
Yeah.
Now, one of the problems is that, of course, we don't have the medical records and we don't deserve the medical records. But it does seem that they have overly controlled her entire life, even if she's not allowed to get in the car with her boyfriend, which was another allegation. I mean, what is going on? It absolutely cannot be happening. It feels like it cannot be happening in the state of California, but certainly the conservators do have authority to determine which doctors that she sees to some extent and which medical procedures that she is allowed to have. The really frightening part about this is that as I have evaluated the paperwork, this conservatorship was unconstitutional and ran afoul of probate law from the very beginning.
Well, let's listen to a little bit more from Britney Spears' statement to the California court last week. She recounted a conversation with her father, again, one of her conservators, where, according to Spears, her father told her that he had arranged to have her placed in a psychiatric facility. And here's what Britney Spears said, her father said.
I'm sorry, Brittany. You have to listen to your doctors. They are planning to send you to a small home in Beverly Hills to do a small rehab program that we're going to make up for you. You're going to pay $60,000 a month for this. I cried on the phone for an hour, and he loved every minute of it. The control he had over someone as powerful as me, he loved it. I packed my bags and went to that place. I worked 7 days a week, no days off, which in California, the only similar thing to this is called sex trafficking, making anyone work against their will, taking all their possessions away, credit card, cash, phone, passport card, and placing them in a home where they all lived in the house with me, the nurses, the 24/7 security. There was one chef that came there and cooked for me daily during the weekdays. They watched me changed every day naked, morning, noon, and night. My body, I had no privacy door for my room. If I didn't do any of my meetings and work 8 to 6 at night, which is 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off, I wouldn't be able to see my kids or my boyfriend.
Lisa McCartley, respond to that. I mean, how much power over someone's, like she says, movements, privacy, et cetera, are conservators legally allowed to have?
All right. Again, nothing about this conservatorship is lawful from the very beginning. The probate court does not have that type of authority. So in my opinion, all of this is Britney Spears, to the extent that this is what is happening. She's been lied to. She's been gaslit. She's been misled. And the fact that she has a court-appointed attorney that is allowing this to happen, to me, is even more egregious. The whole point of an attorney for the conservatee is to protect against these abuses. And if this turns out to be true, and I have no reason to doubt Brittany at this point, so I'm going to say it sounds like it's truthful. This was abusive. This is predatory. This is horrifying and is not consistent with the law of the state of California.
You know, she said repeatedly in her statement to the court last week that she wants the conservatorship removed. She even went so far as to say that she wants to sue her family for what she says she's been through. And she wants the conservatorship removed without having to be reevaluated. I mean, she went out of her way to make that point over and over and over again. And this attorney that you talked about filed a motion just yesterday to remove Britney Spears' father as conservator of the estate. The Superior Court denied the request. Do we have any sense about why? And what's your response to that?
So as we were speaking, I went on the LA court website. That's my job. That's what I've been doing for over two decades. I did not see a motion being filed. What I saw was the court finally signing an order approving Bessemer Trust and Jamie Spears as co-conservators. And even that is a half-baked petition that the court-appointed attorney came up with. In terms of how Britney gets out of this conservatorship, I've been clear about this and all of my social media and every statement. She needs to get her own attorney who is independent from the court and competent enough to file a writ of habeas corpus. She does not need to be evaluated. She does not need to file a petition. She has been denied due process, and those are the circumstances that the Court of Appeals in California can immediately rectify, but she has to get away from Sam Ingham. I cannot emphasize that enough.
But Lisa, how are the conservatorships supposed to work? It sounds like you're saying that she cannot get her own attorney outside of the court-appointed one, or am I misunderstanding you?
Oh, she absolutely can. She just has to reach out and make a telephone call. And what I'm concerned about is that she may have been gaslit, because the way that this conservatorship was established, she actually did hire an attorney. She might have even hired two or three different attorneys. And each and every time, Sam Ingham went to the Superior Court, where he was known to be a favorite of the judges, and he told the judges unlawfully and, I believe, unethically that Ms. Spears lacked capacity to retain an attorney, even though she had, in fact, retained an attorney named Adam Streisand. So all she needs to do is pick up a phone, and any number of competent attorneys would jump all over themselves to represent Britney Jean Spears, probably for free, and they can terminate this conservatorship with a writ to the Court of Appeals.
Well, Lisa McCarley is a probate and conservatorship attorney practicing in Los Angeles County. Lisa, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me and listening. Thank you.
When we come back, we'll talk more broadly about how conservatorships are supposed to work, and again, what happens when they don't. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about what Britney Spears revealed to the world when she spoke to a California court last week about the conditions she says she has had to endure under her more than decade-long conservatorship. And we're taking the opportunity to look more broadly about how conservatorships are supposed to work and often do, but what happens when they go wrong, when they become abusive, and why that happens, and whether modifications are needed to the laws around how conservatorships are set by courts. And so, as we mentioned at the end of the last segment, you might be wondering why thus far Britney Spears didn't demand her conservatorship be lifted or hire her own independent, non-court-appointed attorney. She's, after all, a world-famous pop star and very wealthy. Why didn't she do that? Well, here's in part what she explained to the judge last week.
Ma'am, I didn't know I could petition the conservatorship to end it. I'm sorry for my ignorance, but I honestly didn't know that. But honestly, I don't think I owe anyone to be evaluated. I've done more than enough. I don't feel like I should even be in a room with anyone to offend me by trying to question my capacity of intelligence, whether I need to be in this stupid conservatorship or not. I've done more than enough.
That's Britney Spears just last week. Well, joining us now is Sam Sugar. He's the founder of the nonprofit South Florida Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianships, which he founded after his mother-in-law was put in the care of a guardian. And he's author of Guardianships and the Elderly, The Perfect Crime. Sam Sugar, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for inviting me.
So first of all, I wonder how much you can tell us about the case that got you, that pulled you into this world of guardianships or conservatorships that have gone terribly wrong.
The case that you're referencing is one that I am forbidden by the court to talk about. If I mention even a word about it, especially on NPR, I will immediately be sued because to stop the insane litigation, people who are involved in these situations often agree to settlements that claim no fault of anyone in particular, but to settle the case, you have to agree to a non-disclosure agreement and a non-disparagement agreement. And that's one of the reasons why victims are often very silent and very reluctant to tell their stories, because it involves even more ridiculous, outrageously expensive litigation that no one wants, except the people who make money from the litigation.
Mm. Now, there are many conservatorships or guardianships, again, depending on what state you live in, that are, you know, godsends. We've heard from some listeners, and we'll play their thoughts a bit later in the show. But how do we have a sense, do you have a sense, Sam, about how widespread abusive cases are?
To answer that question, you have to be aware of the fact that there are no statistics kept by the states or the federal government on either the number of new guardianships, the total of number of wards in the country, or anything else having to do with these cases, which are almost always sequestered, meaning the records are closed, because of the excuse that these cases are mental health issues, as though in the 21st century, we still think mental health is some kind of a voodoo curse. But that's the excuse that's used to sequester these cases. And as a result, it is very difficult for advocates like myself and my colleagues to study this phenomenon, this really incredibly invasive business that originates in probate courts across the country. Some places it's a guardianship, other places call it a conservatorship, but it is an incredibly amazing human trafficking racket, as was mentioned before, and it is tyrannical to the nth degree. If you or a loved one winds up enmeshed in one of these never-ending probate litigations, your lives will be ruined. The inheritance money that often families fight over will all be gone. And that's why when I talk to public audiences like your audience, I think it's really important to let people understand that if you are put in a guardianship or conservatorship, you no longer have your human or civil or American rights, and you are owned, literally owned, by another human being who has absolute control over every aspect of your life. Yes, including what medications you get. Brittany was given lithium, but she does not have a diagnosis that anyone is aware of manic depressive illness or bipolar disease. And yet the conservator, who happens to be her father, and by the way, Bessemer Trust is not yet a co-conservator. The papers were just filed 7 months late yesterday. It is an incredibly invasive, tyrannical, court-based human trafficking operation.
Yeah, so Sam, let me just jump in here because I just want to, for people who are not familiar with the process of conservatorships or guardianships, I just want to start with a basic question here. I mean, in the Britney Spears case, you know, her father and a lawyer were made the conservators, as we mentioned at the top of the show, in 2008 because she was going through some rather difficult times. And so is it that in most or many cases, the conservatorship is within the family? But there's also a smaller group of what turn out to be, as you're saying, predatory conservatorships that can actually originate from outside a family?
So in order to address that question, you just have to have some basic information.
Yes,
and that is, there are different types of guardianships. The most common form of guardianship is when a family member is appointed as the guardian or conservator of a loved one. They don't get paid. They do it for free. It's a full time and a half job, really. And they, however, are held to the same standards as a professional guardian. And the definition of a professional guardian varies from state to state and what their qualifications, which are minimal, I might add, might be. There's a third type of guardianship that is usually handled by social service agencies for the poor people, the people without assets. And the striking difference between all of those is that in the penurious guardianships, there's almost no litigations. Everything's cut and dry. It's an administrative procedure, and people can sometimes get the help they need. Whereas in the private guardianships, it's all about money, and money is generated by litigation and back and forth charges that can go on for decades and can dissipate a multi-million dollar estate in the blink of an eye, because legal fees are unlimited, guardian fees are unlimited. It's an astounding business that is in the business of creating, not avoiding, or terminating guardianships. And it's extremely lucrative.
Okay, so I have to understand here, let's focus on these professional guardians. I mean, do you have an example of how those professional guardians, again, just in cases where it becomes abusive, how do they even begin to enter the picture?
In order to become a court favorite, and again, this is more complicated that I'm going to try to explain it, you have to curry the favor of the judge, whatever that means. Generally speaking, professional guardians are on a wheel, and the judge is supposed to spin that wheel and appoint the next person that comes up. But in reality, in places like Florida and Michigan and Nevada, Colorado, California, that doesn't happen. And the court develops favorites. For example, in Michigan, one particular public administrator who served as a public guardian had over 4,000 cases at any particular time. That's absurd. In Florida, the infamous Rebecca Fearley, who goes on trial for her intentional killing, so they say, of one of her wards, had over 450 wards at any time. The court insider triad of the judge, the guardian, the professional guardian, and the lawyer hired by the guardian to protect the guardian's interest, but paid for from the estate of the ward, and there is tremendous irony in that, are the three individuals in this court with all the power. It is an asymmetric system in that it happens instantaneously, and anyone who gets in the way of this freight train of guardianship, soon finds out that it's extremely difficult to even find a lawyer to represent them, and that the likelihood of their intercession to a better outcome, meaning what the law calls the best interests of the ward, is very, very remote.
Well, we have an example here, and it's the story of Gadi Pakalnis's aunt. Gadi Pakalnis's yes. aunt, I want to be sure I get the family relationships right here, who owned and ran a beachfront hotel and several other properties in Florida. And apparently at some time, a local real estate agent was interested in buying those properties, but Gadi's aunt refused to sell. And then supposedly the agent went to court and convinced the court to appoint a guardian named Tracy Hudson Samuels to take over Gadi's aunt's affairs. Okay, so, I mean, we talked to Gadi's nephew here, which we'll hear from in just a second. But what I fail to understand, Sam, is in these egregious cases, how does someone go from saying, I want to buy beachfront commercial real estate, I can't buy it, and then suddenly the case is in a it's in court for a guardianship case? How does that happen?
And that case is notorious. In fact, yesterday I attended a hearing in which that particular former guardian was charged with 19 additional criminal counts of fraud, embezzlement, wire fraud, money laundering. And the answer to your question is there are people who are perfectly willing to act in the best interest of themselves, in other words, money, at the expense of other innocent, vulnerable people. And that kind of activity is far more common than anybody wants to admit. When you have knowledge of this system and you determine that you want to leverage this court-based system, which was intended and the laws written to protect the most vulnerable among us, and you feel as though it's appropriate for you to use that system to abuse a person, to take their estate, to put them in a nursing home. And by the way, the ward in question, whose name was Janita Dursay, that's Getty's aunt, died in COVID-infested nursing home, even though everyone involved in that case begged the court to let her out of there before she died of COVID. They did not listen to those pleas, and she died.
But what I still don't understand is if we're talking about this predatory business amongst some professional guardians here, what I don't understand is that here's a case in which a woman just didn't want to sell her properties. There's no evidence, as far as I can tell, of any kind of mental incapacitation. Why did a court even hear this case? What is going on there that suddenly opened her life to complete seizure by a conservatorship?
The critics among us would answer by saying that this is a racket. It conforms to the dictionary definition of a racket, in that you have a system that's supposed to solve a problem. If you pay the money, you pay the money, and then they create even bigger problems without ever solving the original one. The allegation was that Janita Dursay needed assistance because I think there was a broken window in her little hotel. The court only sees what it wants to see. It has the ability to parse out what passes for evidence in these courts with no juries, no due process, and no nothing except the opinion of a sitting judge. And in Florida, I could name the names of 10 of those judges who have created the vast majority of all the abusive guardianships in the last decade, who continue to sit on the bench and do the same thing over and over again, and are not held to account in any way. There's no oversight. There's no monitoring. There's no supervision. And in that situation, you wouldn't be surprised to see that conflicts of interest leads to abuse.
Right. So we, as I mentioned, we talked to Gadi, who again, it's Gadi's aunt, who was, you know, suffered the avalanche of what happened to her life when this conservatorship was put into place because she didn't want to sell her hotels. And Gadi described to us how the real estate agent with an already indicted predatory guardian in tow, Gadi says, actually lied to the judge during the process of the conservatorship and got away with it.
She, like she said, she's a friend and neighbor, but she was not. Like ABC Action News proved and showed that she's not a neighbor and she's not a friend, even though she's saying she's a friend. She didn't even know what language my aunt speaks, what family she has, her correct name. She didn't even know her correct name when she filed the petition.
So, Sam, I suppose in cases like this, it's what you were saying that seems to be one of the weak links, that the court is supposed to be the adjudicator here, the arbiter of the truth. And yet if it's allowing conservatorships to form, in Florida at least, around documentation that isn't even factually correct, what is going on?
Well, I think this is all symptomatic of what's going on in our society. I think the issue of guardianship, abuse, and exploitation is a microcosm of what's going on in the country, where corruption is kind of wink and nod accepted. In the case of the guardianship court, the absence of any meaningful supervision or oversight leads to this situation where they've gotten away with this stuff for 65 years. This has been going on for a long time. And they have no, they being the court insiders and the people who run the court, the Supreme Court, they have no incentive to change. Mm. So why should they?
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about how this process is supposed to work, because many families have had conservators and see them as lifesavers, as sort of financial lifesavers as well. So we want to understand how it's supposed to work and how we can reduce the number of these abusive cases as well. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about guardianships or conservatorships, and especially after the world heard Britney Spears, the pop superstar, last week speak to a California court about the experiences she said she has had to undergo since 2008, when her father and a lawyer were given total control over her financial life, and she says even her personal and physical life as well. So we're trying to understand how conservatorships are supposed to work, what happens when they don't and they go wrong, and whether or not this is a legal system that needs fixing. But first of all, let's hear a little bit more from Brittany. She told the California judge when she spoke last week that she says the courts have not been doing their work, allowing, when it comes to the fact that they are allowing her conservatorship to continue.
It makes no sense whatsoever for the state of California to sit back and literally watch me with their own two eyes make a living for so many people and pay so many people trucks and buses on tour on the road with me and be told I'm not good enough, but I'm great at what I do. And I allow these people to control what I do, ma'am. And it's enough. It makes no sense at all.
So Britney Spears there making the argument that she's not incapacitated at all and more than capable of running her own life, because essentially she's paying for, she alleged that she's paying, ironically, through the conservatorship for her own limitation, her own life to be limited, even though she is still that pop superstar. And here's what she said she wants going forward.
Going forward, I'm not willing to meet or see anyone I've met with enough people against my will. I'm done. All I want is to own my money for this to end and my boyfriend to drive me in his car.
Okay, so that's Britney Spears speaking to a California court last week. Now, there are many conservatorships in the United States, and many of them work very well for families and actually might hold the family together, hold their finances together. For example, we heard from Mary, an On Point listener in Charleston, South Carolina, who arranged for a conservator when her husband developed significant medical issues. And she says that for her family, the conservatorship was a blessing.
I love him having a conservator. It has served us very well. We have a conservator who is through Family Services Incorporated, and they are bonded, they are very well trained, and they are very diligent in what they do.
That's Mary, an On Point listener in Charleston, South Carolina. I'm joined today by Sam Sugar. He's founded the nonprofit South Florida Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianships. And joining us now is Patricia Keene Martin. She's a probate and elder law attorney and a partner at the law firm Siegel, Lipschitz, Lowe, and Martin. Patricia Keene Martin, welcome to On Point.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, I keep feeling a little bit of caution that I don't want to fall into the same trap that media frequently does, which is focus on these heartbreaking and egregious cases and lose the greater context of the system that those cases are in. So I'm wondering if you have an answer to this question about, do we know how many conservatorships are predatory, as you know, the very gripping example Sam has brought to us, how many become abusive? Is it rife throughout the system, Patricia, or is it just that now recently we've been hearing about the more terrible cases?
So I do not think it is prevalent throughout the system, but that's just my experience over 30 years. In my experience, judges are trying to avoid putting people under guardianships and conservatorships because it is stripping them of their rights. And judges don't, in my experience, like to do that. And the attorneys on the other side fight like heck to prevent it from happening. What I do agree with Dr. Sugar, because there was a lot there to unpack, mm-hmm. is that data collection is really lacking, and the funding for data collection is lacking. In 2017, the World Health Organization did a very comprehensive global analysis of abuse, elder abuse, and in factors that contributed to that, and whether or not they had fiduciaries, whether it was court-appointed or not court-appointed. But it was... basically, the summary of that was that there needs to be more on-the-ground data collected, particularly because every state is different, every county is different in some states, and so certain organizations have been started in order to do that, but there definitely needs to be more data so we can really get a handle on system failures, and there certainly are system failures.
So you've been in doing this for 30 years, handled hundreds of guardianship and conservatorship cases. Can you give us an example of one that works and why it works and why the path of conservatorship was the right thing for that family?
So to try to keep it simple, most of the individuals I would say that we come across are people who are lacking in support, or the family dynamic is dysfunctional, or they just don't have resources. So you have a certain group who are in the hospital, hospitalized for whatever reason, and can't be discharged because they don't have the capacity to discharge themselves, and nobody can. You have people in facilities who otherwise can't, might be evicted, but can't actually file their Medicaid application because there's nobody who will do it for them. So in those type of situations, the conservator in Massachusetts, we have conservator and guardian, the conservator is crucial to basically basically help that person from being evicted or just essentially even leaving the hospital. Then you have situations where, because as Dr. Sugar and Attorney McCarley know, that particularly on the dementia spectrum, and Brittany's case is particularly different because mm-hmm. it's fluctuating capacity, which is very difficult for the court to deal with. But on typical diminished capacity cases, there is a period of time where the elder or diminishing individual is fighting everybody. So they revoke their healthcare proxy, they revoke their power of attorney, they're not listening to everybody, they won't, you know, they're driving when they shouldn't be driving, and the family is just at a loss, don't know what to do, know that their elder is going to drive into a, you know, some store someplace, and the only way to prevent that is from really taking away at least part of their rights. Now, in Massachusetts, we have limited guardianships and conservatorships, which other states that are under the Uniform Probate Code do as well. So you can, and that's sort of the one of, there's so many questions in the Britney Spears case, and like I said, it's a fluctuating capacity case, and that's very difficult for the courts to deal with because the person can become capable again. But certainly she should not be under a full conservatorship, as she definitely has certain capabilities.
Can I just
forgive
me for interrupting you. And Sam, I'm going to come back to you in just a second, but we've got a really terrific question that's just come to us over social media from listener Lizzie Liu, who wants to wonder what percentage of those in conservatorships are women, because the stories we're hearing today reminds Lizzie of the old hysteria diagnosis that allowed men to send their wives away to institutions. Patricia, do we have an answer to that?
So we do, and because it is known as a women's issue, one, because women live statistically longer than men and often don't connect with, you know, statistically men often will get remarried and women statistically won't necessarily, so they end up alone. So there is a much higher percentage of women that are in this type of, or subject to guardianships and conservatorships. I don't know the exact statistic off the top of my head, but it is considered a women's issue.
Okay. So Sam Sugar, I want to talk with you, you and Patricia, about what needs to be fixed. But first of all, again, we actually heard quite a bit from listeners on this. Here is Terry, who called us from Southeast Michigan and described a case where a local elderly couple were placed in the care of an external conservatorship, or one outside of the family. And Terry told us that the conservators sealed off that couple from their relatives.
Their families were not allowed to be in contact with them. They used the old couple's money in order to build a fence so that the children and relatives couldn't even peek around, you know, and talk to them.
Now, Sam, so where are areas in this system that are actually, that can be fixed? And let's talk about Florida for a second, where you are, because I understand a couple of years ago, Ron DeSantis even said that there needs to be some kind of governmental oversight over the registered guardians. And this was, as of 2 or 3 years ago, there were more than 500 registered guardians in Florida. And at the time, the state said that there were more than 130 open investigations into alleged wrongdoing. So has there been progress made on that, on those professional guardians?
So, yes, there has been progress. And for example, yesterday, at a hearing, former guardian Tracy Hudson Samuels was given 19 additional felonious counts. Just today, the FBI released indictments of a notorious guardian in Pennsylvania, and we're seeing more and more of those law enforcement actions. But on the positive side, and again, I just want to say, not every guardianship is terrible. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of good ones. That's the way it's supposed to be. But that's what makes these awful ones so egregious. I'd like to say they were outliers, but our information, based on surveys and anecdotal information, seems to indicate that of the totality of guardianships across the country, as many as 9 to 12% of them are in one way or another corrupt. So the question is, what do you do? There are many of us in the advocacy community who are advocating for the abolishment of the entire system. It's unlikely that that will happen. But there are alternatives to guardianship, such as supported decision making, which instead of appointing an individual substitute decision maker guardian, creates a circle of trust around the individual who needs help. And that circle of trust advises and guides the individual so that their own decisions can be executed properly and safely. There is a program in Florida called Elder Caring Coordination, which involves the use of social workers to intervene before a guardianship is created. And in Oregon, there is an organization that has created a whole army of volunteers to work with the court to go out and assess the status of questionable guardianships. So there definitely is, with more and more exposure of the issue, there are alternatives to guardianship. Personally, I think guardianships is an ossified, antiquated, old world way to deal with a 21st century problem of vulnerable people with assets. And even if you don't have a lot of money or a big house, even if you're poor, you still have lots of money that can be purloined in a guardianship, such as Medicare, such as trusts, such as the value of your little home, or your Social Security check, or your pension. There's a lot of money in guardianship. And for my two cents, removing the financial incentive to litigate and drag these cases out is what it will take for the guardianship system to once again do what it was designed to do.
To guard the vulnerable. Well, Patricia, Patricia Keene Martin, you want to respond to some of these alternative ideas?
Well, there's yes. In all of the, for the most part, my experience has been that the courts and attorneys who practice in this area prefer if there are alternatives like supported decision making in non-crisis planning. The court is not the place to deal with mental health and incapacity issues. It is a legal answer to a medical situation, right? So we're talking very much about the legal situation, but of course it's based upon the person's mental health. So it is by its nature an imperfect system. So to the extent that you can keep it out of the court, like supported decision making, in Massachusetts we have a bill that is pending to try to make that in some ways a law, if possible, then they should. Now, having said that, it has not been my experience that the money part of the practice is why people go into this practice. Mm-hmm. It is, for the most part, socially minded people who are trying to do thankless jobs in very difficult and stressful situations. And maybe get compensated at some lower level. There are, of course, always situations of extremes. And in a case like Britney Spears, where there is this sort of shades of gray of capacity that people are fighting about, there will be a prolonged litigation. I think the court needs to deal with more oversight. I think it needs better coordination with the medical community. Right. I would love to have separate expedited hearings with a judiciary that's trained in mental health, but that's all wishful thinking because it's a budgetary issue ultimately.
And I absolutely hear that, right? Because it seems like whenever we talk about the legal and judicial system in this country, and when it has to deal with issues that may be about diminished capacity, mental health, the true answers lie outside the court, right? In terms of better support for people outside the court. And I think we're all in agreement on that. But we just have like 1 minute left to go. And Sam, I'm going to give you the last word on this, because one thing about Britney's case, which I do wonder about, is the question of, okay, once someone is in a conservatorship, and if it becomes abusive, what is there a way to improve the system such that those conservators can be better monitored? Because otherwise, they are the voice to the court, to the outside world, and the person under the conservatorship does not seem to have a way to say this is not working. We just have about 30 seconds, but is there a way to fix that?
Sure. I always say the best guardianship is the one that never happens. There needs to be legislation. There needs to be a recognition on the part of the Supreme Court in every state and at the Department of Justice that there are crimes being committed throughout the country in guardianship. And until that happens, and until the court makes it easier to end guardianship than it does to start them, then I think this problem will persist and defy a really great solution. But let's hope for the best.
Well, Sam Sugar is the founder of the nonprofit South Florida Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianships and author of Guardianships and the Elderly. Thank you so much for joining us, Sam.
Thank you for having me.
And Patricia Keene Martin, who has been handling hundreds of guardianship cases for the past 30 years and a partner at Siegel, Lipschitz, Lowe and Martin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.